Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Whatever happened to the carefree days of childhood? While such myths die hard, certainly today's children are bombarded with issues of grief and loss, from the daily news to violence in their neighborhoods. In such an environment, even small losses can feel overwhelming. Emotionally as well as physically, the world of our children seems much less safe than the one we remember. As parents, how can we help our children cope? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Helping us to explore issues of children's loss are our guests, both parents themselves, Linda Goldman, author of Life and Loss, A Guide to Help Grieving Children, and Breaking the Silence, A Guide to Help Children with Complicated Grief. She is a grief therapist in private practice. Welcome, Linda.
Hello.
Barbara Sotka is a licensed clinical social worker in an adult and pediatric hospice program. We're glad to have you, Barbara.
Thank you.
Barbara, how do children grieve differently from adults? And is there a difference in the way they grieve according to their ages?
The way children experience the world depends upon their ages and their developmental stages. The concept of death as irreversible and inevitable doesn't really develop for children until almost adolescence. So young children understand death in a very different way. They may think that it is temporary. They may think that it is reversible and that the person will come back. And that's a normal thing for a very young child to think. As children get older, they're more able to understand the concept of physical death. For example, they would understand an explanation like the body stops working, but they might not understand an abstract concept like heaven or the soul or something like that, a more spiritual kind of a concept. What looks to adults like a child grieving is not necessarily what children actually do. Children are not necessarily always sad. They may grieve intermittently in spurts and at unexpected times. And their behavior that they exhibit may not at all be what an adult would expect from a child.
What kind of behavior are you referring to?
Well, we might think that a child should be sad or crying or unhappy or want to be alone. But sometimes children, for example, are very physical and very active when they're grieving. Or they might want to play all the time, just constantly, or have difficulty concentrating or difficulty sleeping, things like that, and yet look reasonably happy and alert.
Linda, what are some normal signs of grief in children that parents could be aware of?
Children grieve in many different ways, you know, and each child is unique, and so is their grief. But I think that there are certain physical signs of grief that are normal, and they could be having nightmares, bedwetting, having a very hard time sleeping. They could also have emotional signs that are normal. As Barbara said, some children may be very sad, and some children may not cry at all. And some children work out their grief through play and active activity, as Barbara said. There are certain characteristics of the grieving child that are normal, and sometimes parents and educators don't really recognize this. Children tend to worry excessively about their loved one. They worry about themselves and their health and the health of their surviving loved ones. They also may tend to idealize the person that died, want to be just like that person, begin to imitate that person. Oftentimes, they may regress, which means going back into an earlier stage of development, where they may become very clingy and very fearful.
Thank you. Barbara, what kinds of losses for a child may be less obvious to adults?
There are all kinds of losses, some of them obvious, like death or moving or divorce of a parent. But there are many little losses, and sometimes even happy things. If a child is graduating and going to a new school, even f- from nursery school to kindergarten, and everyone's looking at that as a very happy and exciting event, the child still may feel very strongly the loss of the security of that nursery school and of that class and that teacher and that environment. So some of the losses are combined with happy things, but it's important to remember that there are both sides of it for a child. Of course, the loss of a pet is a big loss, often for a child. And changes in friendship relationships can be losses. If your child used to be best friends with so-and-so, and then that friendship changed and they're not best friends anymore, well, that's a loss in some way. And the child will mourn that loss in some way.
Adults, I don't think, would normally think of that at all.
If I can also add something, sometimes grieving children feel different because they're going through grief, and they tend to withdraw from other friendships and feel more isolated. And I was also thinking another loss, which we all might tend to forget, is the loss of the day-to-day forever when a child experiences a deep grief and loss issue. And I was thinking of an example of a client of mine whose mom died. And months after the death, she opened the refrigerator door, and her mom always made her noodles when she came home from school. And the noodles weren't there, and she burst into tears. And at that moment, she regrieved her mom's death because the day-to-day of seeing her noodles in the refrigerator weren't there.
Linda, I've seen how adults seek help when they're going through a grieving process, if they are looking for a grief therapist or someone to help them work this through. How do you know if it's an appropriate time to seek outside help for a child?
That's a great question. Because as Barbara said, you know, children may appear to be playing. They may appear to be not grieving. They may withdraw for a while. I think that it's the length of the symptoms and signs that you see and the intensity of what the children are feeling. I also think it depends on if it's a complicated grief issue. And if I can just give a brief example.
Yeah, you need to clarify that.
Which
for
I will
us.
Say a complicated grief issue is one that's really hard for the children to grieve openly about. For example, a death that involves shame and stigma, like suicide. I had a client who said that she lost all of her old friends, as we just mentioned, after her father died, because when she went to her new school after the summer, her father committed suicide. She didn't call her old friends, and when I asked her why, she said, well, I couldn't call them, because if I called them, I'd have to tell them my father died, and if I told them my father died, I'd have to tell them how he died. So her grief kept her locked into a real feeling of isolation. And that's one area where I feel like outside help is important. Or if the child has mentioned anything about hurting themselves or anyone else, I would take that very seriously and pursue that with a professional.
Also, I think it's important to assess what other resources are available for a child. Sometimes if a child and parent are grieving together, they each may be protecting each other. The child doesn't want to say anything to make the parent sad, and the parent doesn't want to bring it up for the child because that might make them sad. If there are other people with whom the child feels close and who are available to the child, it can be helpful for a parent to specifically request another adult who already has a relationship with the child to try and be available for this. But if there isn't anybody else, then I think it's important to consider professional help.
My son was just commenting today, my 19-year-old, that when he was 14 and a friend died very suddenly from a heart disease that the other children did not know about, they had all just begun high school, and the school brought over the guidance counselor from the middle school who knew these children very well, in addition to other people coming in to talk with them. And he said, boy, she was so helpful. Mm-hmm. She was the person we needed around us. The kids also got together in groups, and the parents were a little bit worried about that. I wanted to ask you about that, Linda. They got together. There were several houses they would kind of congregate at during a day or two right afterwards, and then over the weekend and in evenings, and they just wanted to talk about the friend that had died.
I think that that's wonderful. I mean, and one sign of grief for, I think, children and adults is that children and adults want to tell and retell their stories, say their memories, and they need a safe space, and it is such a supportive space to be around people with shared grief. And so I think that that was wonderful that your child got an opportunity to do that. And I think when you work with a grieving child, it's a team effort. And so I feel like the school needs to be a part of it, support people in the family, and if outside intervention is needed, that too.
What was interesting to me was the business about somebody in the family, because I have a friend who long ago said to her kids, I think they were teenagers growing up, and it was apropos of something, if we weren't around to talk to and you had an issue, who would you go to? And I was thinking, just in terms of general parenting, that's a pretty good thing for a kid to sort of have in his head.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's helpful to identify people for all kinds of tasks around grief and loss. If, for example, there is a family member who is ill and a death is expected, I think it's important to ask a child, who do you want to come to school to get you? If we can't come, if the parents can't come, who would you like to have come to get you? It gives the child some sense of choice, and it helps the parent identify who the child feels close to, so that the child can have some say in how these things happen. But it's important to remember all the little pieces of what will happen to the child.
And I would guess in this era of families being fragmented and so forth, that kids need to know that they have permission to call long distance mm-hmm. and talk to whoever they need to talk to.
And that's a good point. In the same vein, in the school system, because I also, when I work with the school system, I'll say to the kids, who do you feel is your friend at school? Mm-hmm. If you get overwhelmed with grief, who do you feel safe to go to? And then we can set that up. And when you mentioned about phone calling, and we said before that children worry excessively about the surviving parent or guardian, and if they know that they can call and check and see if they're okay during their initial grief period, it really helps.
How about a situation, we've been talking about death and so forth, but mm-hmm. how about a situation where a child is distraught over something we would consider much less of an issue, but it's an issue for that kid for whatever reason. How do you convince the school system and the adults around to be aware and to give that child the leeway to be able to maybe go and make a phone call or do whatever's necessary?
I think with trainings and just creating an awareness that a child could be in a very deep grief over the loss of a toy, which may represent much larger losses, that there's an underlying reason why this child is having such an emotional upset, and that what we can do as adults and caring adults is to have respect that this child is telling you something about their path and their grief.
So in other words, a parent could go to a school administrator, counselor, teacher, and say, listen, this is what's going on.
Yeah, you can go, I would, to a counselor especially, I think, might be helpful. I've also found that if a parent really doesn't feel that they're getting response from a school, that it's very helpful to have a pediatrician call. That
great idea.
They somehow...
A little intervention here. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
is helpful. But most schools are very cooperative. They want to be helpful. Mm-hmm. They want to help the child. They understand that the child will function better in school if they don't have to worry.
And even in the best of schools, I was just thinking, mistakes are made. And I just heard this example, which was shocking to me. This boy's mom died suddenly, and Mother's Day was two weeks later. And, of course, all the kids make things for their mother on Mother's Day, and no one came up to this child and said, you know, I'm really sorry your mom died. But I'm here for you, and you might want to make her a card anyway, or you might want to make one for someone else. No one said that, and then their homework assignment was to interview their mothers for Mother's Day.
Oh my God,
and this little child came home terrified he was going to get into trouble.
Because he had no mother to interview.
It was certainly not a school system that wanted to do anything mean or cruel. I think it was unintentional. But I think we have to be ever more vigilant to have an advocate for that child, whether it be a supportive friend in the family or a pediatrician, that says this is what this child needs.
And as parents, we probably need to know that we have permission mm-hmm. if we see a situation like that of a child who's a son of a friend, that we
should step right in and make a phone call.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think we also have to be aware that for a child who has lost his mother, every Mother's Day is going to bring up these issues. It's not just that very first one. And that children, in fact, at each developmental stage have to, in some way, deal with that grief again with their new knowledge and new understanding, but also that each time something comes up, they have to face that fact again. So I would say that in every single before-school conference that surviving parent has, they should make sure that the teacher knows that this is the situation in the house. Sometimes it's many years before the parent has remarried. The teacher would have no way of knowing. It's not something that's on the front of kids' folders, but it's important to keep in mind that this is still the child's reality and that these things bring up the issue, force the issue in a very powerful way for a child.
And they're the very times where the kids feel the most alone. You're so right. And in Life and Loss, I did develop a loss and grief inventory that I wish all the school systems would have, that not only create an awareness of Mother's Day and Father's Day and when the person died, but that person's birthday is a hard day. And that child will more likely than not have a very difficult time every year. And there, as you said, Barbara, there needs to be some acknowledgement and recognition of that child's special needs.
Is this what we mean when we talk about children revisiting their grief at different periods in their lives?
Yeah, with different pieces of information that come to them as they grow up and develop. If a very young child has a significant loss in their life and they don't really understand that death is inevitable and that it's final and that it's universal, that death means one thing to them. As they grow older and they get to understand these concepts, the death really takes on a new meaning, and the child, who is really a different person with different skills of thinking and experiencing, has to redo in some way the loss to make that experience of grief correspond with who the child is at that particular age. So it is hard work over and over for a child, and it's important, I think, for parents to remember this. It isn't that the child, that there's anything wrong with the child. In fact, it's what's right with the child that they're doing this, because if they don't do it, they're
stuck.
They haven't dealt with the experience as the people who they now are.
I was thinking of an example of a teenager regrieving. There was a little boy whose dad died, and he loved to play with cars with his dad, and that's what they shared together. And when he was 16, he regrieved not having his dad to share getting his license and everything, and was very sad about it. But then he decided to drive around where his dad was buried in the cemetery to share that experience with him. And in a way, it was just a wonderful way to celebrate with his dad.
Intelligent choice.
Grieving.
Very positive.
And it has to go on even into adulthood. Another example that's very similar is that a young woman who I spent a lot of time with, actually, when she graduated from law school, took her diploma to the cemetery because her father had been a lawyer and he had died many, many years before. But before she even thought she might want to be a lawyer. But this was something that she really felt that she needed to do, and she was in her mid-20s. So it doesn't necessarily end at a certain particular age. And it's important to remember that, I think, as well.
So we sort of need to know that it's a life skill that we are all going through at some part. Yeah. Well, speaking of cemeteries, I guess we need to get to one of the things that parents I know are concerned about, and that's, you know, what's the best way to prepare a child for an impending death? And the big one about should children attend funerals?
I think it is very, very important to be honest with children and to tell them the truth in words that they can understand and that are accessible to them. I think it's important to use real words and not euphemisms. If you think about it, think of the euphemisms we have for death. A person passes away. Well, for a young children, they passed what? Away from what? The phrase doesn't mean any sense. Or what could be more terrifying? She lost her mother. And where is she? Why did she find her? And what if I get lost? Mm-hmm. So for young children, the euphemisms that we have are very difficult to manage, not to mention up in heaven, which I won't get into, but it's hard. We should use words that are the real words. The person died or the pet died. Another one is we say that we put pets to sleep. Well,
yikes.
When are they going to wake up?
Terrifying.
And if I go to sleep, am I going to wake up? I think it's just very important to remember that young children are literal, concrete thinkers, and they accept it at face value, the words that you give them. So with young children, use the right words and be honest, because they know if you're not telling them the truth. A lot of times we think we are protecting the child by not giving them information, but I would really question, who are we protecting here? I think we're protecting ourselves maybe from having to answer unpleasant questions. In terms of funerals, I think it really depends on the age of the child, the relationship that the child had with the person who died, and the wishes of the child. But one thing you want to try to avoid is the child feeling that everybody else in the family is at this very important place, at this having this important experience, and the child is the only one left out.
And sometimes they can think of much worse things going on than what actually happened.
A child's imagination is much worse. And if you prepare them from the very beginning, I mean, we assume kids know a lot, but really they don't. So, you know, a special car is going to come. I mean, from the beginning, and this is what that car will look like. And then when we get in the car, every single solitary step of the way. Children who are prepared do better in everything. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important to prepare a child. I would not force a child to go to a funeral, but I would try to give them the support that they would feel would make that possible for them.
Okay. Linda, what about children who just don't want to talk about it, want to be left alone? Is that a dangerous thing?
I think if a child withdraws and denies that the death happened for a long period of time, I think that might be a red flag. But children may not want to talk about it, and they may be able to grieve in other ways. I mean, I think that especially young children can't always articulate. I know in grief therapy that when they come in, they're going to stay there for the time they're with me and just talk about their mom that died. But we use a lot of projective techniques where I might say, here's a toy telephone, who do you wish you could call? And they would sit and pretend to call their mom and have a whole conversation and tell them about the day without ever having to really acknowledge that that's why they're there and that's what they need to talk about. You know, sometimes we write stories using animals that children like to project into, but they can put their feelings in that. So there's lots of ways to get children to get their feelings to come out without speaking directly of the death.
If I might say also, sometimes children play and they express themselves through play better than through words. Words aren't really a child's natural medium. I worked with a child who parents had just divorced, very angry divorce. And all she wanted to do was play with puzzles, and she never wanted to talk about anything, and she only wanted to play with puzzles. And everyone said, well, she's not dealing with this. And maybe 2 months later, she said to her mother, she was 8 years old, the reason I like to play with puzzles is because sometimes I feel all apart, and sometimes I feel all put together.
Oh, my goodness.
How interesting.
So,
speaking of articulate children.
This was her way. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
And so she was doing it.
We didn't exactly know.
We're
running very tight on time, but we wanted very quick mention if there are books that either of you might like to suggest for parents.
Well, I have just done an interactive storybook for young children on suicide. It's called Bart Speaks Out. I also think that About Dying by Sarah Bonnet Stein is a great book for young children.
Okay. Thank you. We'd like to thank Barbara Sotka and Linda Goldman for their insights and suggestions on grief and loss.
This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share a parent's perspective.
If you would like to send suggestions, comments, or questions, you can email us at parentspur@aol.com.
Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burke.